This is Yahoo Finance Presents. I'm Jennifer Schonberger. Bitcoin has been at the center of conversation for cryptocurrencies, but the real story of the year may be Ethereum. The second largest cryptocurrency has had a monster run, outpacing Bitcoin. More projects are now being developed on the Ethereum blockchain. Here to weigh in on the future of crypto, Ethereum, and what may be the next generation of Ethereum is one of the core former developers of the Ethereum cryptocurrency, Lane Reddick. Lane, welcome to Yahoo Finance. It's so great to have you on the program.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks so much for having me. Very excited to be here and always excited to talk about this important, exciting topic.
Well, it's so great to have you. As I mentioned, crypto has had a huge run this year, not just in terms of price run-up, right? We're starting to see more applications, more adoption. How do you see cryptocurrencies changing the future? What is your outlook for the long term?
Yeah, I think my outlook for the long term is extremely positive. I think it has been that way for, you know, certainly the 4-ish years that I've been in the space. I think if anything, it's gotten a little bit faster, right? It's been more accelerated and sort of begun this process of mass adoption a bit faster than we thought. I think it's really a very transformative set of ideas and technologies that are going to change the ways we conduct business, the ways we transact, and in particular, the ways that we, you know, people come together, coordinate, start businesses, on a small scale and a large scale.
So where are we with crypto right now? How early in the innings are we? And how much of this could be really integrated into our daily lives as far as mass adoption, right? Right now, we're starting to see debit cards, credit cards that are linked to crypto.
I think it's super early. I think, you know, some folks might say we're somewhere in like the third or the fourth inning. If you ask me, it's kind of like top of the second, bottom of the second inning. So it's really, really early days. Another metaphor I like to use is we're somewhere like where personal computing was in kind of the mid to late 70s, right? So like kind of the Apple Macintosh computer hasn't come out yet, which is to say that, you know, the usability is not quite there, but we're getting there very rapidly. You mentioned, you know, debit cards, applications like that. I'm finding myself doing more and more of my day-to-day life, either entirely in crypto or partially in crypto, in the sense that we have, you know, large companies that are acting as bridges now that allow us to transact in the dollar world using, crypto assets, things like that. I don't think that there's any area of our lives that it's not going to touch. And I think, you know, it may be a little bit late for us, but I think that our children are going to grow up in a world where they don't have traditional bank accounts. They have sort of crypto accounts.
All right, well, let's talk about that a little bit more, because Ethereum is certainly gaining ground. The majority of projects now being built on the Ethereum blockchain, certainly NFTs, most of them use Ethereum. What do you see as the best use cases for Ethereum as we go forward from here?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think it's also a very good time to have this conversation, because a lot of this has developed very rapidly over the past year. Like, I'm not sure I would have had a really good answer to your question a year or two ago. Now, I like to talk about the big three. And I think these are three incontrovertible, like indisputable value positive use cases for Ethereum and other smart contract platforms, but primarily Ethereum. The first is stablecoins, right, which are these cryptographic tokens that are not volatile. They don't swing wildly the way that assets like Bitcoin and Ether do. The second is NFTs. I think a lot of your listeners will be familiar with NFTs. We're seeing digitization of art and a lot of other types of assets. And the third case is DAOs, which are a little bit harder to explain, but this is this idea of these decentralized autonomous organizations, groups of people who might live in the same place or they might be spread out around the world, coming together and creating these almost like company light structures where they can share assets and build interesting kind of governance systems and use these to build products and services.
And you also think that this could sort of change the way that companies are formed, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, there's this idea of virtualization in computing, right? And this made it much cheaper and much easier to create a tech startup in, let's say, the 2000s than it was in the 90s, right? In the 90s, you needed, you know, $1 million of capital. You needed a physical room hosting a bunch of like physical servers to build anything. And then cloud computing came along and made it much easier, faster, cheaper to spin up a startup and a set of infrastructure for an application. I think that DAOs are going to have the same impact on business and kind of ventures and collaboration, in the sense that, you know, whereas it's a very slow, complicated process to kind of raise funds in traditional channels and hire lawyers, a DAO can be spun up in a matter of minutes or seconds, very, very cheaply.
Let's talk about NFTs. We're starting to see them applied in the music industry, movies, gaming, sports, and it's certainly creating new forms of revenue streams for those industries. How do you see the application of NFTs evolving? Do you think we could see it being translated to records, for instance, like deeds for homes, passports? I just heard that MIT is offering diplomas in the form of NFTs.
Yeah, I think this is one of the most exciting developments in this space in the past couple of years, and one of the most exciting trends. I think the really short answer to your question is that I see all things being digitized. And I think that that's, you know, to the extent that we're moving into a digitally native metaverse world, it kind of makes sense, right? Because things need a digital representation to be able to exist in a metaverse. You know, just to use one concrete example here, one of my favorite examples of where NFTs can move the needle is, let's talk about music and records, right? I can't tell you how often I'm browsing music on a platform like Spotify or YouTube, and I find an artist that I haven't heard before, and I'm really into their music. And I want to follow that artist, but I want to do more. I want to kind of invest in that artist. And maybe even in an NFT world, I can sort of own a stake in the future revenue stream associated with a particular song, which I think is very exciting. That's something that can't happen without this sort of technology.
Yeah, I feel you, because on the side, I'm a singer-songwriter, so I fully support this.
I would totally invest in you via NFT, so you should make this a thing.
well, thank you, Lane. I appreciate that. So tell me, though, why is Ethereum the blockchain of choice for so many of these applications, and particularly NFTs?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. You know, I think obviously many folks, all of your readers and listeners will be familiar with Bitcoin, which came first. Bitcoin is a really powerful, important tool around the world, financially, socially, economically. But, you know, it's designed in such a way that it does precisely one thing really, really well and really securely. And that one thing is that it's this ledger system. It allows people to kind of, you know, buy and trade, transfer stakes in this digital asset called Bitcoin. Now, Ethereum emerged a few years later as a generalization of the idea of Bitcoin, right? So a good metaphor here is if Bitcoin is kind of like a pocket calculator, right? It kind of does this one thing very, very well. Ethereum is a general purpose tool. You can think of it a bit like an iPhone or a smartphone that has like an app store associated with it, right? That lets you build and deploy all sorts of applications on it. It was very general purpose. And so I think the answer to your question is that, you know, there's demand. There's clearly, this is what sort of the past year or two has really demonstrated, is that there's clear market demand for many, many different types of applications, not just the ledger application, right? NFTs being a good example of that. So I think Ethereum, you know, is a tool that's good enough. It's not perfect by any means. There's lots of attempts to kind of build, you know, improve versions of it, but it's good enough. And it was right time, right place. And just a generalization of the ideas that Bitcoin pioneered.
Now you've left the Ethereum platform and you're working on a new blockchain called Space Mesh, but it's more eco-friendly. And you say it could be the next generation of Ethereum?
Possibly. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, you know, the future is very difficult to predict. It's one of the reasons this is such an exciting time to be alive. But yeah, I think, you know, Space Mesh is that's correct. So 2 years ago, I kind of changed gears and helped launch the Space Mesh project. It has two key differentiators. The first, as you alluded to a second ago, is that it's greener than Bitcoin or Ethereum mining, in the sense that instead of using proof of work mining, which obviously requires, it's very energy intensive, right? We use an alternative form of mining called proof of space time, which involves committing a certain amount of free hard drive space. So anyone, any device anywhere in the world who has, say, 100 gigabytes free on their laptop or their computer can plug that into the Space Mesh protocol and immediately begin mining and earning coins. So it's greener because there's little to no electricity required to do this. And the second attribute, as I said a second ago, is that anyone anywhere can do this without needing expertise and without needing access to special hardware. That's a really key differentiator. Bitcoin and Ethereum, for a long time now, it has not been possible to mine from home.
What's your outlook for the price of Ethereum? Do you think that it eventually could overtake Bitcoin in terms of market capitalization and become the dominant cryptocurrency?
This is a very difficult question. You know, I think that it's very difficult to compare Ethereum and Bitcoin, or I should say Ether, which of course is the native asset of the Ethereum blockchain, with Bitcoin. It's not really an apples to apples comparison, right? Bitcoin has different monetary characteristics than Ethereum does. And in particular, when we look at Ether, it's a bit harder to reason about it because it primarily serves as what's called gas, right? So every time you like run an application on the Ethereum blockchain, you need to hold this Ether coin to pay for the gas. So it exhibits characteristics, like monetary characteristics. It also exhibits these characteristics of commodities like fuel. So long story short, I think my forecast will be that these two will continue to vie for quite some time for kind of the top spot. I think that Ethereum has a bright future. I think that Bitcoin also has a very bright future. And I encourage friends and colleagues to take a long, hard look at both of them and consider investing in both.
And I've got to ask you about the volatility, right? Crypto is so volatile. And that raises the question of how could it be a payment when it is so volatile? Do you expect that perhaps there is going to be enough adoption, enough investment that could smooth over the volatility? Or should we be looking at this as less of a payment and more in terms of the underlying blockchain technology?
Yeah, I do think that the volatility will come down over time, will trend down over time. And I think that we actually have an empirical example of this. If you look at gold, which in many ways is kind of the thing that Bitcoin seeks to replace as a sort of better form of digital gold. When gold first began trading on kind of global modern financial markets in the 70s, it was extremely volatile. In fact, the volatility was not far from what Bitcoin's volatility looked like in the beginning. But over time, as the markets matured and as more investors entered, especially institutional investors, and as liquidity increased, the markets got deeper and more mature, the volatility trended downwards. And I think that if you look at Bitcoin over the past 12 years, there's a similar phenomenon playing out there. So I think that volatility will probably trend down over time. Bitcoin has been less volatile this year, for sure, than it was in the past. But I think it's also worth pointing out that we now have these new stable assets, like the stable coins I mentioned a moment ago. So for folks who want to live in the crypto metaverse, but don't want to expose themselves to the volatility, they have other options today.
Well, Lane, thank you so much for all of the insight. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I know we could talk about this all day long. Thanks so much for your insight.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer. This is a great conversation.
Lane Reddick, the former core developer of Ethereum.